Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get love in a better place. Pick up the phone, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when I am on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis from beautiful Westchester. It's gorgeous outside, and we have award-winning author Marilyn Levinson here, and Carrie Singleton is back with Dewey Decimated. Whoa, you don't want to go into the Clover Ridge Library, but if you do, you never know what's going to happen. Carrie is just off a hot string of murder cases. She's cool, centered around the spooky local library in Clover Ridge, Connecticut. She could really use a break, but that's not going to happen. And my favorite character, of course, is the cat Smokey Joe, the resident cat and Evelyn. I wish I had an Evelyn. The library's ghosts are drawn into another tantalizing whodunit. And I'm not going to tell you anymore. Marilyn is here, and I know there are people listening on my phone, and that's nice. I hope you listen. And hi, how are you? Welcome back to MJ Network.
Oh, thank you so much, Fran. It's always a pleasure to come and visit and chat. We always have a nice time.
Yes, so, we will, and we're going to include you in on a panel coming up soon, as soon as I put it together for January. Definitely.
Oh, okay, certainly. I love panels. They're so much fun.
Because it's hard to create a murder mystery. I've attempted it and don't even want to know. So I need the pros to tell me how you come up with the plot and how you figure out who's dead, which is the best part of the novel. So
start with two ideas. I always have two areas, and I bring them together. In some books, it's more difficult than others, but when I achieve this, I'm very happy. The hardest time for me to do that was in Checked Out for Murder, when there is a cold case involved, and a brother and sister are both back in the Clover Ridge, and they don't even know it, and one of them is murdered. And at the same time, there is a film being made in Clover Ridge, and people involved in the cast have something to do with the old murder. So that was a difficult one. But that's what I usually do. I usually start with two ideas. They seem not at all related, but I like to bring them together into the plot and have them mix and intermingle.
I don't think
most people do that, but this is how it's evolved for me. It's not something I would recommend, let me say that.
No, I started to write one, which is really different. Trust me, this is unique. And I don't know
well,
how
I
came
that,
up
you
with
know,
it.
I think unique is good because there are so many, in a way, the mystery is very linear. I remember that in Agatha Christie, the stories were very linear.
Yes.
These days, I notice that very often people jump around with characters or go back and forth in time. I see that in a lot of modern stories.
You do, so do I.
And a lot of people don't like it.
It depends on how it's done.
Yeah.
It depends on how it's done. You know, like Lee Matthew Goldberg did one. It was really easy to follow. And then a few others, I just read every other chapter. Then I went back and read every other chapter, and then I go, why am I being tortured here? It's, like, not worth it. I came up with an idea, but we'll see what happens. I wrote a great prologue, I could tell you that. The scenery is scary. The premise of it is something really based on a television program that was on a long time ago. I just figured I would reinvent something different, but so I have to figure out how to kill people.
I know. You think, who will be the victim? And you always need to have many suspects, And course, you, I like to use, in fact, I just wrote an article about this. I very often use cold cases, and in a way there is one in Dewey Decimated, because you find the body and he's been there for he's been hidden for 6 years, and of course it has to be uncovered who is this person, and the ghost, this is the ghost who enters the library, and he doesn't know who he is or why he's there or how he got there. And this is something that Carrie has to deal with, and Evelyn, and they have to keep him hidden because he's very disruptive in the library. So here you have two ghosts in completely different capacities.
That's what I love about that book. But I watched Cold Case with Kelly, Kelly Ziegler, on Oxygen. And they do only cold cases. It's really interesting.
Yes, I've seen that. Yeah,
I love it.
Well, I've also used it in Death Overdue. There was an actual cold case. I think the thing about mysteries is that in most cases, and I try to do it, that each character has a secret, and of course these secrets go back into the past. And we, as readers, are very intrigued by anything that, number one, is covered up, and number two, that goes back into a past life of a character. And we find this, I think we're all secretly gossips, and we're very intrigued by what happened in the past, and readers want to know. So as you reveal what each character is hiding, which may or may not impact the actual current murders, it's very intriguing. And this is how you find out what suspects, how they impact the mystery and the story in general.
That's true. That's why I read your books, because I learn a lot and I underline a lot. And I have to tell you that the pages are all destroyed and underlined and whatever, but there's...
Really?
I got hands out for them. Yeah, I destroyed...
What do you underline, for example?
I underline important facts, and I underline what I want to ask you questions about, and I underline what I want to put in my review, which, of course, is different than everybody else, and I'll post it later. It's just different. I'm looking at the book. It's right here. And if I took a picture of it, you would say, oh, my God, what the devil did she do? Circle, underline? And yes. I have a specific medical provider that calls me every – he called me yesterday, as a matter of fact. He wanted to know how many books I have for him. And that's the only reason I'm allowed to visit. There's nothing wrong with me. He just says, my wife wants to know when you bring in more books. I go next week.
But you give him the underlined books?
He takes them all. He doesn't care.
Oh.
They don't
care
because you know what? And then he asked me for a specific author because he knows I review everybody. So I managed to get him a copy of the book so he could read Daniel Silver's last book. So
he's a wonderful writer.
So if I have a problem, I get an answer. So what the beginning of the book, this was really unique. How come you started with Carrie wanting to know, this was really scary, about Dylan's parents, and he was not happy?
Well, I think it's been very difficult for Carrie to even contemplate getting married because she's had such a disruptive kind of a life, and it's taken her a while to get used to the idea of being really connected to a person for a long time. And she also, well, you know, she's comfortable with Dylan, otherwise she wouldn't be marrying him. And she's happy that she has, you know, her aunt and uncle, and she's gotten on better terms with her father. But it does bother her that Dylan never talks about his parents. And he seems disconnected from them. And she feels if they're going to be married, she has to understand why this is the case. In fact, he seems to gravitate to her family. And we know that he spent time with her aunt and uncle, even when she and her brother weren't there, her great aunt and uncle. And he even has a relationship with her father. I mean, it's a work relationship, but it's also a personal relationship. And at times, because, you know, Carrie herself is, this is a new relationship for her too, because her father was absent so much in her childhood. But she's almost jealous of this in a sibling kind of a way. I mean, she's happy that Dylan and Jim have a relationship. And that's why she's wondering, what happened? What did they do to him? Is something going to spring out later on in life?
Mm-hmm.
So she expresses this concern to Harriet, you know, who always is willing and happy to listen to her and speak to her about things. So Harriet advises her to talk to Dylan, and Carrie says, well, he doesn't always want to talk about it. And Harriet tells her to be patient. And, of course, when the ghost turns out to be his uncle, things are forced out into the open.
That was so cool, though. Now, first of all, I have to tell you, you got to bring her mother back, because she's really cool with the boyfriend and the husband. I love the mother. She's got so much bunk for an older lady. She's married to this young guy, and let me tell you, she's got energy. She got to bring her back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Carrie's had to learn how to relate to her mother.
I know.
Her mother, you know, she's not the best mother material. And she's manipulative. Where Jim actually loves Carrie for Carrie. Linda kind of, you know, oh, my daughter this, my daughter that, and she's not really very maternal. But Carrie's learned to accept her more, and I think it's better that she lives in California with her young, and her husband's very nice, actually, you know.
Yeah,
and she's a very good wife to him. So Carrie's learned to accept that. But I guess you do find her an interesting character, right? She even changed her name for a while.
She's really my kind of person. Yeah, you would have met my mother, you'd know that too. So why is the library being renovated? And this is the primary core of what happens in the book. And this is really scary. This was on a cold case that I watched the other day, by the way.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
Uh-huh. I'm telling you, Kelly Ziegler.
That is
funny. That is. This is on a cold case, without a doubt. And in the basement of a library, and then there was another one with outside behind somebody's house.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Oh, yeah. I tape them all because I love watching this stuff. It helps me think of what I don't know how to write.
Yeah. So, well, okay. I didn't know of any actual cold case at the time.
Yeah.
But for a minute, let's go into the setting. The setting of the town of Clover Ridge is the hub of the town. It's a very old town from the 1600s. It was originally built around the green, and the green at one time was much larger, and cattle used to roam there. I mean, it's still kind of big, and they have a lot of events that take place at the green. But around the green are houses or buildings. They once were houses, and they also were places where people worked, like the candlestick maker and the baker and the this and the that. And now many of these buildings, and some of them are attached, like the one that is attached to the library, were old homes, and the one next to the library had been let go for a very long time. It was in very bad shape. And so somebody, the family that few people owned it, two out of three people, one person died, they own this building and they sell it to the library because the library has grown and they need an expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they're doing in the building next door. That's attached to the library. The library is like at the end of a corner of the green. And across the green at the far end is where Carrie's aunt and uncle, great aunt and uncle, have the house. There are still some buildings that are still homes, But most of them are, there's a gallery, like around the corner from the library, the gallery and the inn and many other places, the market. You know, I mentioned them in the series. And now the library needs to be expanded, so the town bought the building next door, and they're renovating it, and that's where the body is found, in the basement, hidden away, tucked under sort of something that's jutting out.
I'll tell you something. That probably would scare me to go into somebody's basement or whatever.
Right. Well, it should have been checked out more carefully.
Yeah.
It was like under a shelf, but it, you know, this hadn't been used in a very long time. It was wrapped up in a blanket, and this is, nobody knows where, how this body got there, and there, should we mention the investigative reporter or not?
Yeah, I did. I have a question about that also. Yeah. Tell us about the investigative reporter and what does she really want to do? I have that at the bottom, but I can push it up on top. No problem. I got that.
Oh, well, she's just, what does she want to do? She wants to be famous. She wants to reveal whatever she can and in any way that she can. And she doesn't care what she says about different people or what toes she steps on. She's actually very good at her job. I mean, she has these various people doing research for her, and she seems to uncover a lot of material before the police do. In fact, it's she who discovers who the body is really, you know, the identity of the body. And she wants to join forces with Carrie. And, of course, Carrie doesn't want to do this at all. She doesn't want to have anything to do with this obnoxious woman.
I don't blame her. I really don't blame her, but this obnoxious woman has played a very important part, but we're going to say what right now. So we've got the council. What is their main issue? Who are the members? And what are the three issues that will be discussed, and who is in favor of them?
Well, Carrie is on the town council.
Yeah.
She didn't get here. She was almost pushed on the council by Al Tripp, who is the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
A woman named Jeanette is leaving, and she's moving, she and her husband are moving out of state. And everyone urges Carrie to be on the council, and they feel she'd be, you know, she's young. She represents young and vibrant life in the town, and so even her aunt and uncle, and they almost feel guilty urging her to be on the council because she has enough in her own life. You know, she's getting used to being engaged, and she has a full-time job, and but she says she'll do it. She'll fill out the term, which is like a little over a year. So who is on the council? There are five members. There's Al Tripp, the mayor. He's a former lawyer. He's like in his middle 40s. There's Babette Fisher. She is an art teacher at the high school. In fact, she plays a prominent role in the next book. And Carrie's not too crazy about Babette. She feels she... She's not pretending to be an artiste, but she takes on this aura of being an artiste. She wears flowing clothes. Her blonde hair is usually a mess, kind of. It sort of flutters around her head, and she's pretty. She's, let's say, in her approaching 50. And she seems to seek attention in ways, I think, that annoys Carrie. And she always comes to the meeting late. And when I get to this other point, I'll just... And then there is... Oh, I forgot his name already. And then there's the builder, Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one other man. There's one other man on the council, right? So there are five I it's terrible. You forget your fifth characters' names, but there are five members of the council, and there are three. There is this beautiful, beautiful parcel of land that has to be. They have to make a decision on it, and the decision is: should it be remain what it is? A piece of the wilderness. The town is borders on the Long Island Sound.
Mm-hmm.
So this property is rather valuable. Any waterfront property is. And there are these people who want to keep it just what it is. You know, it's a preserve where people can walk around the trails, and it's an inexpensive way of keeping it this way also, although it needs some work. So there are the people who are keeping it the preserve, and then there are the people who want to turn it into a condo, and the other one of the men wants that because he wants to put money into the condo, and he also possibly wants to live there. And then the third one is making it an elegant, a very expensive park with swimming and boating. And because it's expensive, it would require a fee. And so this is what happened. So these are the three possibilities. And these five members all have their own opinions on and their own reasons why one of these three should be chosen. So they have an open meeting to hear what the people in the town feel about this, and it will require three of the five votes to pass the will it remain a preserve, will it become an upscale kind of a park, or will it become sold and expensive condos built here.
Well, they don't realize that if it comes the last two, that it may cost them taxes in public money, whereas the preserve is something beautiful. And that sounds like my choice. I have to go with that on that one. Sorry, people. That's my choice.
Well, I think
if I was
the condo,
on the council.
But one of the condo would bring in revenue. Because the land would be
the
sold and these people
the building,
would be... Yeah, so, you know, there's that, you know, you could see that people want to... But then the argument was, you know, are we making this an ultra-rich town? You know, we're only, you know, is this the kind of town... I mean, not that it's a poor town, you know, but it's sort of leaning in one direction. And also... And then the park, Babette wants the park partly because her cousin, her young cousin, is involved. He belongs to the architect team that would possibly design the park. Not that he probably would be, but he would have some in, and she feels it would help his career. So she has a personal reason to want that one. Yeah.
Well, now we have the problem of the renovations because of the dead body is becoming expensive and destroyed. And now poor Carrie might not get her stadium-styled auditorium that she needs. And how is this discussed? And who on the board will resolve it would help her? Because she needs the stadium-styled auditorium, but she's not getting the size that she wants either. So poor Carrie... You know, she doesn't want to lose, but how does she manage to get anything? Because that's important to her, too.
Well, okay, Carrie, I guess when we work or we have something in mind, one thing that Carrie wanted very much for the new library and what was loomed in her head was a stadium-seated auditorium where they could have wonderful presentations of plays, of shows, of whatever. And I guess I had, where I used to live, we had that built while I was living there. And it's really very impressive to have mm-hmm. that as part of one's library. So Carrie wanted this as opposed to, you know, they have a meeting room right now, but it's rather a long windowless build, you know, it's limited. It's very limited with what they can do. And as we know, libraries are being used for so much more now. It has so many more functions. So this is something that always was very special to her and what she dreamed about. And really, suddenly there were problems with the construction, not from the power company, but from the it's the architect who had errors. And so this is presented to her and Sally, who's her boss, the director, and she's told, she has to do one or the other. Either they'll make it a smaller auditorium or they'll make it just a flat auditorium, which is kind of difficult for people to see. It's not as nice. And this is where Evelyn came and helped her, where she said she mentioned something where, having seats that aren't quite as expensive, cutting costs in a different way. And they go along with this, and so Carrie is happy that she's going to have the number of seats that they originally planned, and it's going to be on a slant so that people can see easily. Stadium seating stadium seated auditorium.
That is so cool. That is so cool. When the identity of the man, we've got to get to this guy. When the identity of the man is gone, how does Dylan feel when he learns about it and when he meets them? That was so cool. And you got to admit, the guy was a pain in the neck.
Yes, he really was. Well, okay. This is Alec, Dunmore, is Dylan's uncle. And, well, we have to mention that Carrie has already told Dylan that she can see a ghost. So this kind of prepares him. So he knows that Carrie can see Evelyn and she has a relationship with Evelyn, although when he almost ran off the road when he heard about it. And so now that he's told that number one, there's a ghost in the library aside from Evelyn, and number two, that this ghost is his uncle, Dylan doesn't want to see him at first.
Mm.
And he tells Carrie why. At first, he was very taken with his uncle who used to come and visit his... Alec is Dylan's mother's brother, younger brother. And whenever he would come, he lived in Chicago, and whenever he would come to Clover Ridge, it was like excitement came into town. He would tell Dylan all these wonderful stories, these adventures. He took him to the circus. He was, like this proverbial uncle, who brings all these wonderful things, the excitement, the happiness, and then he'd leave. And then Dylan grew up, and when he was in college, he went to college near where his uncle lived, and his uncle was not, he'd make plans to see Dylan, and he wouldn't show, or I can't come, or he'd break the plans. And he always used to hear that his father would say, your brother should get a real job. He heard that his uncle pulled all kinds of schemes. And Dylan didn't want to believe it. But then he saw for himself how irresponsible his uncle Alec was. So he just lost touch with Alec. And he had no idea why his brother, why his uncle was in Clover Ridge. And his parents never said anything about him, expecting him. And he really doesn't, he didn't have good memories of his uncle. And he saw for himself that his father was right, that his uncle in many ways was a petty thief and mm-hmm. never really worked, was always looking for the easy way out. So he really, in a way, didn't want to get involved and be hurt again.
Yeah, I know. This whole thing is about the setting of the building and the scam to get the man to buy it. Now, who is Marcella and Albert? What part do they play?
Oh, they are two elderly people who live in the nearby senior home, in Clover Ridge.
Yeah, I know, they're cool.
And yeah, and they are the two people who sold the building to the town. And that's how they're involved. And Carrie visits them a few times to get more information, to find out about what do they know about who could have murdered Alec, because Alec he has amnesia. He doesn't understand why he personally doesn't even know who he is until he's told who he is. And he doesn't know why he came to Clover Ridge and why he never called his sister, because there was no evidence that he had. So Carrie talks to Marcella and her cousin Alfred because she's hoping to get some information. And one person who could have murdered Alec is Marcella's brother James. Mm-hmm. James is a nasty character. He was very bossy, and he was the one who prevented the sale of this old derelict building for many years because he kept hoping to get a higher price. So they're wondering, could James had tried to sell it to Alec, and then did Alec back out, or did James kill Alec? Well, we don't know because James is dead. But still, Carrie's hoping to learn something from these two elderly people.
Okay, before I forget, on Monday, the author of In the Middle will be here. On the 22nd, Tim Ahrens and the Grand Game. It's a scary book. The characters are pawns that are used, real people, on a chessboard. You don't want to be one of them.
Oh.
On the 28th, we have Lee Matthew Goldberg, Immoral Origins. On the 29th, we have Dead in the Alley. Now, this one is on the 3rd. This is right up my alley. Dr. George Cavuto, who is my professor in college for reading, it taught me everything. He's the reason I understand what I read. He's phenomenal. We're going to do another discussion because it's not an interview. He asks me questions. I ask him questions. We're going to talk about how children acquire language, receptive and expressive language. We're going to talk about what happens when a child is taught to decode words and comprehends nothing. That's my field. And we're going to talk about different reading programs that are good, the ones I used when I was working, and the Fran Lewis Invent Your Own reading program, because I invented my own way of doing things. And we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more on October 3rd. And on the 6th, The Perfect Brother. On the 10th, I'm hoping that Dick Belsky's okay. We're going to talk about It's in the News, his new book. And on the 12th, Stephen Manchester, Dad. And that's just part of October. So if anybody out there has a book coming out, better tell me now, because they only have dates from January to next December. I have nothing for the rest of this year. I am totally booked. I don't know how, but yeah. It's like scary. What? Okay, so as the plot develops, how did you define the library here? They won't even put books in the library anymore. You can't even
leave
them.
What do you mean? What do you mean they won't?
In other words, I asked them a long time ago if they would put my titles in the
children's
section.
Oh, right, you told me that. Yes.
And they're horrible. I don't go into the library because I get the books for free, people. But my husband uses them. So as the pot develops, I don't know. They have, you know, certain kinds of programs and stuff, but not a lot that I can deal with. So as the pot develops, how did you develop the programs in her library? And are these some things that you actually went through? Did you do?
Yeah, okay, many. Okay, I have a good friend. My friend Anne Marie is very much like Carrie. I don't mean she looks like Carrie or acts like Carrie or kills people. I mean, not that Carrie kills people or solves murders, but Anne Marie and the other, she's, and the woman in charge of adult services, they would arrange the programs, and Anne Marie did many of the food programs that I discuss, and many of the other things. Yes, many of the things of the programs that I do go into, we have at our library. Like you, I don't get to my library very often now because of COVID, and because I honestly now listen to more books than I used to. So I get them right on my phone via Libby. So I did teach writing the mystery novel last year, but in January, this past January. But but we do have many, many programs, and many of them I did we do have, or did have before COVID, at our library. So I once got in a review, somebody complained, no library is like this, but that's not true. Many, many libraries have many, many programs. In fact, I have a friend who is a librarian on Long Island, and she told me that they had goat yoga, and I couldn't believe it, that they actually would have that in the library. You know, they had that once, I think. So, I mean, almost anything goes. And the way I even got the idea for this whole series was, we have a very large piece of property behind our library that they turned into a woodland. Oh my God, it's just gorgeous. And we would have outdoor programs there. They have concerts there, and I was watching a drummer on the green grass, and I was thinking, as the Lauren, she was the head of adult programs at the time, she was introducing him, and I was thinking, well, that's perfect. That would be a wonderful character, a wonderful sleuth, someone who is in charge of programs in a library, because it would give me a chance of bringing in new people. And so a lot of this is based on actual fact, what actually does go on in my library, in libraries all over. It's not just about books anymore. It's about programs. It's about electronics. It's about people and people enjoying all different aspects of entertainment, learning, courses, classes, hands-on events, you know, like making whatever, jewelry, glass, painting glassware. You know, there are just so many programs that different libraries offer. So I thought it was a wonderful background.
I know.
Sad.
But it bothers me more. My professor asked me, he put me on the spot. I interviewed Jane Ann Krantz in January.
Oh,
Yes, I did. And I interviewed Iris Johansson last month. And I interviewed Tess. Oh, yes, just me. And they asked me questions. Yep, I did. They come on often, not Jane Ann Krantz, but Tess comes on twice a year, and so does Iris come on twice a year. And she won't interview with just anybody because she knows I won't ask questions that are too related to the plot. But we talked about the fact that kids don't read enough. And we talked about the fact, how do you get children, that's what this thing on October 3rd is, how to get children to pick up a book, even if it's on Kindle, it doesn't matter, how to get them to read. Because we talked about that on my last show with my professor, with the UE book. We talked about that, and we decided that you know, kids don't pick up books anymore. They play games, they play video games, and their classroom teachers really don't know how to teach reading like I do.
Mm.
And that's a fact. So let's talk about, we have a few more minutes. How did you create Carrie and John? What is the police, he gets annoyed with her very easily.
Yes. Well, first of all, John Mathers is the chief in town. You know, actually, he's lieutenant. John and his wife are very. I mean, John and Carrie have their relationship is on many levels. First of all, they're very fond of each other. He's in his mid-50s. And, of course, he feels protective of her. He doesn't want her to do anything dangerous. Second of all, Dylan is an investigator, so he and John are very similar. They're in similar fields, and they respect each other. And John and his wife, Sylvia, and Carrie and Dylan socialize. So there's that level as well. The investigative reporter is very insulting of John in this book,
mm-hmm.
and Carrie's very defensive of him. She feels he is a good police worker, and he is doing his best to deal with the situation, the murders, and she often can find out information because she somehow either knows the people or has a way of getting to them in a way that perhaps an official police person might not be able to, or the person might not open up to to someone in someone official. And so John knows that Carrie can get certain information, and he is appreciative of it. He doesn't scorn it. He's appreciative of her. He gets exasperated with Carrie, and he worries about Carrie, and sometimes he gets a little jealous or a little when he's upstaged, as in the ending of this book, which we won't go into, where sometimes Carrie gets to the murderer a step or two before he does. But they're fond of each other. There's none of this hostility. And he will often come and talk to her and Dylan. By the same token, he wants her to give him the information, anything that she learns, which she usually does. But, of course, she doesn't necessarily get the same back from him. Sometimes she gets information from him, but other times he can't share information, and she understands this.
What happens? We have to get a few more questions. What happens at the funeral? Okay.
Which funeral is this?
Alex's funeral.
Alex's funeral.
The ghost. What happens at the ghost? What happens when they find out who he is? Does the ghost stay as a ghost at the library?
Well, okay. Evelyn is inscrutable. Sometimes she makes proclamations, and sometimes she'll tell Carrie just so much. So when we find out who murdered Alex, at first Evelyn said that when the person who murdered Alex is revealed, then Alec can go to his rest and stop appearing in ghostly form. Okay, the person is revealed, but then Alec is still hanging around the library, and Evelyn and Carrie have to continue to keep him hidden in rooms that aren't being used. And then Evelyn says that he cannot go to his rest until the person's okay, what happens is the person who murdered Alec is murdered himself, and now there's another stipulation that this this murderer has to be found before Alec can go to his rest. And Alec is getting frantic. You know, he wants to put an end to this. And so that finally happens, and Dylan comes and agrees to say goodbye to his uncle, you know, and see him off. So we are left with one ghost in the building, a ghost who knows how to behave, a ghost who knows how to appear and not disrupt people. I mean, it doesn't. Evelyn can only be seen by Carrie and Carrie's little cousin Tacy. So Evelyn, you know, would never disturb and Carrie learns that Evelyn is there as sort of their guardian angel. She's sort of there. She's been sent there to oversee the people who live in Clover Ridge and the people who visit Clover Ridge, and I guess try and make things as smooth in their lives as she can via her relationship with Carrie. Which is sometimes why she asks Carrie to do things, you know, to visit people or to handle certain situations.
Well, I could use Evelyn to handle a couple of situations. So if she wants to come visit
could.
Me, there's a whole bunch of people that deserve a ghost and what she could do and her connections. What can they say? So we have a few more minutes. How does Julia doesn't give up. Julia doesn't give up. And she's constantly hounding her. Why doesn't she can't get rid of her?
Oh, wait, what do you mean?
But she could do stuff that she can't do, this reporter.
Yes, you mean Julie, the investigative reporter.
Yeah, the pain in the butt.
She is, but she's also quite amazing. She has these people doing research for her, and they find out all kinds of things. And so this is even how, at the end, they're able to trail the murderer and they're able to find out who this person is. And so what happens is that Carrie does not really, this is a case that Carrie did not really want to get involved in at all until she found out that Alec was Dylan's uncle. And then she's forced into doing even more. When Julie wants to join forces with her to find out who murdered Alex, Carrie figures she may as well because she's doing it anyway. And Julie's just going to keep nagging her. So she reluctantly agrees to work with her. And this, of course, is... This thrills Julie no end. But Julie just continues to drive her crazy even after the murder is resolved, the murderer is found. And she really, really is a very insistent person and insistent on doing. It's like she lives and breathes her job. She that's all she is an investigative reporter. There's no other side to her.
So before we end, where do you see Dylan and Carrie in the future? And who are you bringing back in the next one?
Oh, the next book. Well, this is the book. I finished the next book, and I'm going over it. I'm going over it the third time. Mm-hmm. And Babette plays an important role in this book. And I have two new interesting characters. The next book has a lot to do with art.
Good.
Yeah, and the gallery that with Susan is one of Carrie's two assistants, Trish and Susan. And Susan is an artist, and Carrie helps bring Susan out. If you remember in Dewey Decimated, in The Death Overdue. Susan comes across as very lackadaisical until Carrie discovers what a phenomenal artist she is. And Susan starts making all kinds of art projects for the library. And the gallery on the green starts buying her stuff. And this grows, and this is a big part of what happens in the next book.
We're not telling anybody what's happening in the next book. But I love art. I love art. I love music. I'm a music major in college. Yes, I did. I aced all the keyboard stuff and the transposition, and then there was, well, the sad part that is they make you take voice.
And oh, I didn't know really? That.
Well, unfortunately, I wanted to major in writing because I love writing, and I was a writing and reading stuff developer. And I would have been the principal of the school, but my mom got Alzheimer's, so I had to retire early, and that was more important. But yeah, the dean of the school of Hunter College decided that since I was a concert pianist and played the violin, that music would be a great major. And I don't know if I wanted to. I screamed. I said, "You have to be kidding! That's not what I wanted to do." He did me the biggest favor by forcing me to do something I didn't want to do.
Really?
It is the hardest major in the world because there are no books, people. You either learn it or you don't. They teach you keyboard harmony, transposition, how to write music, and they don't give you examples. You got to figure it out. You got to look up, you know, different samples of sonatinas and waltz and symphonies and stuff. And when they tell you to write the first part, you better make sure to get it right. You better listen to a few. And that was easy. That was the easy part. I aced that part. Then there was voice. It was scary.
Yeah, I could imagine. I could just imagine.
Yeah, it was hilarious, basically, because I could hear it in my head. And one professor was right, and one professor was kind of overstepped his job and said a few things that he shouldn't have said. And I said, "You got to be kidding." And then I had to do a program in front of 200 people in order to graduate. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, well, my sister sang. My sister was in Broadway shows. My sister was phenomenal. So she helped me come up with a program, which I can't tell anybody because they're still laughing. I was actually sang on key, but it was original. No one could get up and do what I did. I mean, they were singing arias and music from some show tunes and individual songs that they made up, and I sang things that no one would ever get up and do. That's the truth.
That's scary.
It was an original program, yeah, and the professor looked at me, and he cracked up laughing because my choices of songs were not exactly adult, and he looked at me and he said, "You were very brave. You sang on key." He gave me a B+ in the class, and he gave me another B+, and I all had all A's. It was really bothered me. He said, "I'll give you another B+ not to take the next one." I said, "You are so on." So you just never know how, you know, passionate. And I wound up being part of, I was taught for all those years, but I was also the musical director for a while, so sort of he sort of helped me. So what about Dylan and Carrie? Where do you see them? Are they ever going to tie the knot, or are you going to let them wait a while?
Well, I think I'll let you wait and see what happens.
Okay. Well, you
because
can't
it
kill
does
off
play
Dylan. You,
it does play a big
Dylan.
Part in the next two books.
Uh-huh.
So I'm already thinking of book number 8, which will be the last book in the series.
Oh, that's sad. But you know what? You
well,
can't kill off any of my characters, though. You can't kill off Susan. You can't kill off Sally.
Well, the point of it is I feel that a lot of this series is really I delve deep into my characters, as you know, and my characters
yeah.
are very important to me. And I feel that a great deal of what this, yes, they're all about mysteries, but this series is about Carrie's growth and development
mm-hmm.
and how she's developed and how she came from a dysfunctional family and
yeah.
managed to find love and security and friendship with close relationships with relatives, with different people, different who she encounters. And I feel that I conclude this in the 8th book, which I'm plotting in my mind right now. So what happens with Carrie and Dylan, a lot of the next two books has to do with their future. So I don't really want to go into that any further.
No. So where can we get all of your books? And of course, you're going to have to come up with another series.
I have another series in mind. Also, my children's book, Rufus and Magic Run Amok, is I had written it many years ago, and I wrote it before Harry Potter. It's about a boy who finds out he's a witch. And it was a children's choice, and he doesn't want to tell anyone that he's a witch because his mother and his grandmother and his aunt are all witches, and they're going to make him take classes and use his witchiness, his abilities for good causes. So he doesn't control the magic, and it grows and grows and grows and runs amok. And I have a contract for this book to come out and three future ones. But
nice.
I do have another mystery series that I've been wanting to write, and it takes place on an island. The setting is an island. Sort of, so far the island is someplace in the Long Island. It's not very far from you and me. It's in the Long Island. It's in the Long Island Sound. It's an island that I've created. And while it's isolated in the sense that you have to get there by ferry, you know, it's not off very far away. I'm very excited about creating a whole new cast of characters, quite different people rather than, you know, somewhat different than Clover Ridge. But so, I'm looking forward to creating all these new characters. I have some in mind, of course.
Well, I want to thank you so much. This has been great. I do want to set up a panel. I'll let you know when in January. I want to talk about the writing process and how you decide, you know, your different series and stuff like that, because it's for me. Forget about it.
Wonderful. Who else do you think would be on the panel?
I'm hoping that, I won't say who it is because the person's going through whatever. I'm hoping this one person will be okay to do this. But I know I have a lot of other people that, other female authors that would be more than happy to be on the panel.
Oh, sure. I love panels. It's so much fun to hear how other people deal with a similar situation something that you're going through or a process that you're going through.
That's right. That's
what
I want to learn from everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Everybody, it's a beautiful day outside. Let me see what
the temperature here
is. I'm so happy that I had you here. And I'll tell you this. It's cool outside, I have to tell you now. It is now
good to know.
72 degrees, but it doesn't feel like that. Everybody, have a blessed day, and bye.
Goodbye, everyone, and thank you so much for having me, Fran.